last one yet. They're now 4-9 in overtime. Thank you.
Welcome to hour number two, final hour of the week. Bruce Woolley Show, glad to have you along, and really glad to welcome back to the show. And this is my fault, it's not his fault, that Matt Mayer is now back with us, Matt of Opportunity Ohio. You can check him out on Twitter, and you should, at Ohio Matt. Matt was a regular part of the program before I had my little medical incident in September, and I've just been remiss in getting him back on. And it's interesting timing that when I called Matt this morning and said, hey, you want to come on and talk about Ohio and jobs and the State of the State address, you first made me laugh, Matt, because you said, oh, did the governor have a state address? Which is my point, is we never hear from this guy.
Yeah, I mean, look, he is almost irrelevant given how little good things are happening in Ohio and how little he has pushed any agenda in now 5 years and counting. And so, I guess it should be on my radar screen, but, you know, like, it wasn't. And I'll go back and read what he said, which will probably be, you know, not much of anything important. He'll take credit for stuff that probably is a skewing of the data in order to try to make it look good. But as, you know, my piece in the Federalist today talks about, you know, there's a problem in Ohio when you have a trifecta Republican government with the supermajority in the House and Senate, yet so little gets done year after year.
Well, this is a pulpit that you've been pounding for a long time. I mean, at least a year when you were on prior to me going away in September, was that Jobs Ohio is not really creating jobs for Ohio, that Cincinnati, Columbus, the surrounding areas doing pretty well, rest of the state not doing very well. But I love how you start your piece in the Federalist today, talking about the length of time that Republicans have had control and how much control Republicans have in Ohio relative to states where I just demonstrated with this Wall Street Journal Moody's study, Texas and Florida have 7 of the top 10 cities in terms of best places to find really good paying jobs, not the part-time jobs that are pretty much the entire foundation of the jobs report every month. We should be doing much better given the control that they have less of in Florida and Texas that is manifesting itself in more good things for its citizens.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right, Bruce. What I did is I looked at what we call it the Republican trifectas, right? Where Republicans control the governor's office as well as the both chambers of the legislature, or in Nebraska's case, one chamber, and see what the percentage. And Ohio is the 11th strongest Republican trifecta. Both Florida and Texas are below that. They have less control in Florida and Texas than Republicans here in Ohio have. Yet, as you know, Bruce, and you, this goes back over a decade, right? You don't ever hear of anything important happening in Ohio. You always hear of important things happening in places like Texas, places like Florida, whether it's education reform, whether it's defending taxpayers, whether it's cutting spending, whether it's job creation. It doesn't matter, right? Things here don't seem to happen, and that's a leadership issue, right? Because Republican voters continue to put in office career politicians of the establishment type that just don't have any incentive to get anything big done, because they keep winning by just kind of treading water. And as they do that, as I say, Ohio is a dead state walking.
Matt Mayer is our guest. Matt is with Opportunity Ohio, opportunityohio.org. You can follow him on Twitter at Ohio Matt and read his Substack, The Patriot Mind, The Patriot Mind. Okay, so you write in this Federalist piece about a lot of promises get made on big consequential things coming to Ohio. A cracker plant in eastern Ohio had a $100 million investment, went nowhere. Peloton plant, western Ohio, belly up before a single bike was built. I'm wondering, Matt, if Intel needs to be on this list, because I had a conversation with someone this morning who is heavily involved in bringing these kinds of endeavors to Ohio. And the date he said now that Intel might be operational is years behind the date that it was originally announced. And I don't think we're going to get the first chip out of the Intel factory until Mike DeWine is out of the governor's office.
Well, that's for sure. Intel publicly announced that they are now at least a year or two behind schedule, behind anything happening in Ohio. So we're looking at probably 2027, 2028 at the earliest. And that presumes things don't continue to go poorly for Intel. Intel just announced they lost more in 2023 as a company than they did in 2022. So the turnaround is not happening. There is even more competition now for these semiconductor fabrication plants popping up. They just announced a new one over in Indiana, a right-to-work state, by the way, with Samsung and other companies. And so the problem is not just can it get built. And remember, the deal with Intel Ohio is it only gets built if they can get contracts in place to build chips outside companies. And that has yet to happen. And this is the other thing. And I said this in a piece last week about Intel that's on the Substack account. The Wall Street Journal piece today talked about it. All of these places, right? Arizona, New Mexico, Washington, Colorado, Indiana, Ohio, New York, fabrication plants everywhere, right? That they're building billions and billions. They have to be staffed at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where Ohio, because it's not competitive, it's not right to work. It hasn't got rid of the state income tax, right? Property taxes are going through the roof. So the local tax burden is high. I could go on, right? This is not an attractive place to live or work, especially if you're competing against Texas in other places that are far more attractive, have better weather. So when all these plants start opening up and start competing for workers, how is Intel going to say, oh, come to Ohio? Yeah, we have a lower cost of living in some ways, right? But that doesn't translate if there are all these other things that are negative. And so I have real concerns of not only will the plant get up and running, but if it gets up, will they be able to essentially find workers to work at this fabrication unit, given the competition that will be happening across the country for other workers in better places with better competitive, more prosperous places, more opportunity, more job growth, yada, yada, yada.
Matt Maher, OpportunityOhio.org, our guest. Follow him on Twitter, at OhioMatt, and read his Substack, The Patriot Mind. These states that did well in this Wall Street Journal Moody's study of best cities to find work, Florida, Texas, Tennessee, no state income tax. We have a state income tax here. I know you're a proponent of it going away. How do they make it work in these states without a state income tax?
Well, so one, constrained spending, right? I talk about this in my piece on the Federalist today, where state spending in Ohio over the last 13 years is up over 60%, right? More than 5% a year. And most of that time, pre-Joe Biden, inflation was negligible. Population growth was negligible, right? So they're, Republicans here in Ohio have been exploding spending for no good reason. The other thing is those states didn't expand Medicaid under Obamacare, and that is driving 50% of state spending is now Medicaid expansion that John Kasich did. And we have now 800,000 more Ohioans on Medicaid because of that expansion. And that prohibits you from really getting rid of the state income tax because you're now dependent upon that money to cover the expanded Medicaid cost. So you first have to get rid of repeal the expansion of Medicaid to in order to then get rid of the state income tax. And again, Mike DeWine, John Husted, they have the spines of snails and worms. They're never going to fight those fights. And that's a problem for Ohio for us to get out of this dead state walking environment and become a state that thrives and drives prosperity and innovation across the country.
Read Matt Maher's piece today at thefederalist.com, thefederalist.com. It is not behind a paywall, so you can log in and read it. The headline, with a supermajority Republican trifecta, meaning House, Senate, governor's office. It is stunning, the headline says, how little Ohio Republicans get done and how often they lose consequential battles. And one of those battles is on escalating property taxes. Had a conversation with a friend who wrote an $8,000 check. He doesn't live in a mansion. He lives in a nice home, but he's in the Olentangy School District. You got the reassessment. He's writing a check for $8,000 per half on his taxes. Guess what? He's moving to South Carolina. And you point out in this story, property taxes in Ohio have jumped by the sixth highest rate in America.
Yeah, they're going through the roof. But I talk about this in the piece as well, Bruce. This is important for your listeners to hear. This isn't just about fiscal issues and jobs, right? We lose and get nothing done on social issues, right?
Yep.
Think about this. In the last 13 years, we've legalized gambling that then John Kasich expanded even more unilaterally. We've legalized marijuana now. We now have one of the most radical abortion measures in America embedded in our Constitution, right? And Jobs Ohio, which is a gross failure, jobs have gotten weaker, not stronger, the longer it's been a business. Its funding comes from the securitization of liquor sales, which means we want more Ohioans to become drunk alcoholics so we have more money to throw at companies that then end up not actually doing much, right? So So we lose on all the social issues as well. And that's under a Republican trifecta because we don't have the leadership like they have in other states like Tennessee, like Florida, like Texas. And that is a deep, deep problem for Ohioans.
It is. And, you know, it's not as bad here as it is a lot of places. But the point is we should aspire to better. We should demand better. We certainly have the political clout to do better, and we're not doing it. And I certainly appreciate the way you have been and continue to hold people's feet to the fire who are in those positions of influence. Matt Mayer is with OpportunityOhio.org. You can follow Matt on Twitter, and I would highly recommend you do that for very insightful analysis of business in the state of Ohio. His Twitter handle is @OhioMatt, and read his Substack, The Patriot Mind. Matt, thanks so much, and great job on the Federalist story today.
Hey, thanks for having me, Bruce.
/12:22 means it's time for Today in Crazy. We got to end the week strong with Today in Crazy, and there's no better way to end a week strong than to play an extended cut of what is becoming a priceless daily occurrence, and that is Louisiana Senator John Kennedy questioning a witness on Capitol Hill. Remember the snow bro who seemed like he was a descendant of Jeff Spicoli from Fast Times at Ridgemont High, who testified about climate change and how carbon dioxide is a huge part of our atmosphere. And Kennedy was like, it's actually a very small part of our atmosphere, 0.04%. Well, now, a woman by the name of Zora Milken was in front of John Kennedy. Zorka Millen was in front of John Kennedy. Zorka is the policy director at the FACT Coalition. What does FACT stand for? Financial Accountability and Corporate Transparency. She is in front of Congress and made the blanket allegation that scores of U.S. companies routinely cheat on their taxes. She's like, this is a big problem in the United States of America. They cheat on their taxes. Big problem. We got to get this under control. You guys got to do something. So again, she is the policy director on international tax policy and other transparency priorities. Remember that word, transparency, when John Kennedy tries to get out of her, well, who are these tax cheats, Ms. Millen?
Tax cheats? No. Okay. Have you been to the...
Let me try again. I had my button off. Thought I was playing Joe Biden. I'm playing John Kennedy. I should have my button not only on, but at full volume.
Do you have a list of these tax sheets? No. Okay. Have you been to the IRS and said, here are these companies and they're cheating on their taxes and I can show you how they're doing it?
No, I'm not. That's not a, I've never practiced in that area of law. I'm not a tax whistleblower lawyer.
All you've done is run around saying American companies are cheating on their taxes. I can't tell you who they are. And I haven't been to the IRS to show my data to the IRS, but I want you to believe me that they're cheating on their taxes. Is that your testimony today?
No, Senator, no.
Sure sounds like it.
I think that the case against some of these companies has been well documented in the public.
Which companies?
In the,
let me ask you one because I'm going to run out of time. Tell me in the last 23 seconds, here's your chance. You believe there are major American corporations cheating on their taxes. You just testified to that. I believe you told me yes. Tell me who they are.
I think there are the companies that Mr. Curtis discussed in his testimony.
Tell me who they
are. It includes some of the big tech companies.
Who are the
five worst? It includes some of the pharma companies that are.
Who are the five worst?
I don't have a ranking. I have not compiled.
You don't want to say.
I haven't looked into that.
You understand it makes it hard to believe your allegations if you won't tell us who they are. Talk's cheap. You ever heard that expression? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
By the way, the chairman of that Senate Banking Committee is none other than Ohio's Sherrod Brown, by the way. Now, speaking of all these tax cheats, I found it interesting. Did you see the video of Jeff Bezos, owner of the Washington Post, owner of Amazon, multi-billionaire, tens of billionaire, walking into the state dinner for the Japanese honcho at the White House. Big honchos from Apple at the White House. These are the big companies. Apple's being sued for China, but boy, I sure feel really, really chummy with the Biden administration. That's a little crazy. There's something else that's crazy. According to the organization Speech First, a group that advocates for First Amendment rights on college campuses in the United States, they did an investigation. They unveiled the results yesterday. They found that 165 of 248 institutions that they picked at random mandate DEI-related classes to meet general education requirements. When I went to Ohio State to get my Bachelor of Arts degree in journalism, we were on the quarter system. We had to have 186 hours to graduate. 100 of those hours were what they call basic education requirements. DEI classes, thankfully I'm too old to have been subjected to that nonsense, are required at universities, at least more than half of these universities that they surveyed. What did the study show? The erosion of merit-based principles and buildup of anti-American sentiment has had detrimental impacts on the quality of education and has fostered an environment where conservative voices are systematically marginalized, discredited, and silenced. You know it. Supreme Court ruled against this, by the way. By the way, a year ago, they ruled against this. It's still mandated. Did they get a seamless academic year from 2022 into the 2023-24 academic year? No time to change the policies? No, of course not. They're not going to change the policies until they are censured, fined, and the Justice Department is not going to do it because the Justice Department believes in this nonsense. That's how half the people in the Justice Department have their jobs. Another headline from Today in Crazy. Shocker! The University of Illinois, also woke, has dropped its investigation into star basketball player Terrence Shannon, who is still charged with and faces trial for rape of a college co-ed at the University of Kansas. The school had its own independent investigation, which it announced after Terrence Shannon sued the school to allow him to play basketball while he was awaiting charges or trial for rape. Terrence Shannon's argument was, hey, I can make a lot of money playing basketball at the University of Illinois for my name, my image, and my likeness, and you are standing in the way of my ability to make a living by not allowing me to play. Now, the university could have reinstated him to the team, and they didn't have to play him. They could have said, you're on the team, but we're not going to play you. But, of course, that would have imperiled their ability to win the Big Ten and to go to the Elite Eight. But here's the part that I find interesting. Do you know who Terrence Shannon's witness is on this, that he did nothing wrong? A graduate assistant coach for the basketball team was assigned to drive Terrence Shannon and his teammate to Kansas and chaperone them on the weekend Shannon was charged with rape. The graduate assistant on the basketball team said he never saw anything the woman who is Shannon's accuser described in her allegations. Is that the job of a graduate assistant on a basketball team, to drive a kid from Illinois to Kansas for a weekend of revelry and then to be his character witness?